This podcast is intended for healthcare professionals only. Welcome to this podcast series on diabetes care, which is brought to you as part of Diabetes Knowledge into Practice. I'm Professor Francesco Giorgino, and I'm Professor of Endocrinology and Chairman of the Department of Precision and Regenerative Medicine in the Ionian area at the University of Bari Aldo Moro in Bari, Italy. In this second podcast of our six-part series, we will be discussing the need for balance when treating patients with type 2 diabetes. But what do we mean by balance? Diabetes is among the strongest risk factors for atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease and fosters the development of microvascular complications such as chronic kidney disease and retinopathy. Indeed, cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of morbidity and mortality in type 2 diabetes, with 2 in 3 people with diabetes dying from cardiovascular disease. Several factors influence these complications in individuals with type 2 diabetes, including hyperglycemia, obesity, hypertension, insulin resistance, and dyslipidemia. According to the WHO, excess body weight and hypertension affect a significant proportion of people with diabetes, with more than 1 in 3 patients also being obese and approximately 1 in 2 having high blood pressure. It is therefore vital that we aim to control more than just blood glucose levels when treating certain type 2 diabetes patients, and that we strive for a balance by achieving weight, cardiovascular, and renal targets as well. Here to discuss the need for this balanced approach, the targets we should achieve, and how we can achieve them, is Dr. Vanita Aroda. Dr. Aroda is the director of diabetes clinical research at the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts, and is an associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. She has years of experience in clinical trial conduct and leadership and has written widely on diabetes prevention and novel therapeutics in diabetes and weight management. You can find links to Dr. Aroda's disclosures as well as to any studies discussed in today's interview in the episode notes. So, Vanita, let's begin by understanding the mechanisms that link diabetes with obesity and cardiorenal disease. What can you tell us about all these complex relationships?
It's so good to be here with you, Professor Giorgino. So if you recall, in the last century, the great researchers coined the term metabolic syndrome, and everyone was kind of scratching their heads about it. You know, why were all of these metabolic manifestations clustering together? It was also called Syndrome X or insulin resistance syndrome. But the truth is what we see is glucose, blood pressure, abnormal lipids, and body weight do cluster together. So it's difficult to tease out. But what we do know is that when you target obesity, you do see improvement in the other manifestations. So improvements in glucose, blood pressure, lipids, and all of these other metabolic manifestations, I view them as kind of tips of the iceberg. They are the biomarkers of what is going on underneath in the physiologic space. So, you know, whether that's inflammation, endothelial dysfunction, oxidative stress, there really are multiple dimensions that tie in all of these processes at the whole body level.
Very good. So this brings us to another important question, which is about targets. So what do the guidelines suggest as targets in people with diabetes for HbA1c and glucose values, for BMI, for blood pressure?
So I'll preface it by saying, as with anything, we need to individualize targets to the patients. However, what we do know is if we can, from the get-go, meaning from diagnosis, maintain people's A1Cs to as close to normal as possible. So for example, less than 6.5%, and maintain that average at least less than 7% for the duration, we can really minimize any risk of later complications. Similarly, if we can maintain LDL goals at the individualized target, blood pressure goals as well. So to answer your question more concretely, with A1C, our goals are individualized. Typically, at younger onset when someone has many decades of diabetes and glucose exposure ahead of them, we try to aim for more stringent targets of less than 6.5%. A general rule of thumb for the broader population is about less than 7%. And if someone is at the tail end of life with multiple morbidities, multiple complications, where the priorities are really just to optimize their quality of life at that stage, you can loosen those targets, you know, up to 8%, 8.5%. With blood pressure, all the different society guidelines have really started to tighten the goals. For example, the American Diabetes Association published in its standards this year that the on-treatment goal for blood pressure in persons with diabetes is less than 130 over 80 as safely attained. And that's because there are studies, including people with diabetes, showing that a little bit more intensive achievement of blood pressure does translate into lower cardiovascular outcomes.
Thank you very much. And in your clinical experience, what role do lifestyle changes and weight reduction have in helping us achieve these HbA1c and blood pressure targets?
You bring up a good point in that when we all trained, we talked about ideal body weight. However, what we know is that it really is the percent change from your baseline. So when we talk about body weight, which correlates with body mass index, we know that a body weight change of 5 to 10% weight loss translates into metabolic improvement, improvements in glucose, improvements in blood pressure, improvements in lipids. But what we have also come to appreciate through lots of studies is that the higher magnitude of weight loss also can translate into more disease-modifying effects. So once you're seeing weight loss above 10%, 15%, you start seeing impacts on, you know, regression of the diabetes course and trajectory, improvements in things like sleep apnea, improvements in other manifestations in terms of the progression of disease. So the weight loss target is individualized for the patient, and it is important at every step of the continuum to reinforce healthy lifestyle, healthy food choices, more wholesome food choices, less processed foods, more physical activity at every step of the continuum.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Let's now move to some drug therapy aspects. So in terms of cardioprotective therapeutics for patients with type 2 diabetes, newer therapies such as GLP-1 receptor agonists and SGLT2 inhibitors have shown unprecedented benefits. And what can you tell us about these trial outcomes and the resulting guideline recommendations?
This has been such a serendipitous but paradigm-shifting journey. All of this came about when the FDA mandated that all new diabetes therapeutics also had to be tested on their cardiovascular outcomes. And what we have seen is one trial after another in established or high-risk cardiovascular disease populations, the SGLT2 inhibitors reduce cardiovascular outcomes and the GLP-1 receptor agonists reduce cardiovascular outcomes. But what we've come to appreciate kind of through a, you know, bedside to bench learning going backwards is that they have different profiles. So the SGLT2 inhibitors have a really strong effect in terms of reducing hospitalization for heart failure, reducing progression of chronic kidney disease, particularly in people with diabetes who already have albuminuria and a low GFR. With the GLP-1 receptor agonist, we're seeing more of a consistent profile on targeting the atherosclerotic process itself. So in terms of reducing myocardial infarctions, reducing strokes. So it's kind of a yin and yang between the two. They do have complementary profiles and complementary mechanistic actions. And now what we've seen universally is all the guidelines do recommend, based on the strong evidence on more than over 200,000 participants in these trials, that in those with established or high risk of atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease should receive a GLP-1 receptor agonist and or an SGLT2 inhibitor. The and is debatable. And again, that's individualizable. Those at high risk or with established heart failure, SGLT2 inhibitors should be prioritized. And then those with chronic kidney disease, SGLT2 inhibitors should be prioritized. But then also consider the GLP-1 receptor agonist, because this is also a high cardiovascular risk population.
Thank you. That's very clear. Now, looking to the future, how do you think the treatment of patients with obesity and or high cardiorenal risk will develop?
In a sense, the future is already now, isn't it? Where we've seen even the international consensus guidelines really take a step back and say, you know what? We're not just going to treat the tip of the iceberg. It's not just about lowering the glucose, lowering the lipids, lowering the blood pressure, but let's take a more holistic approach to the patient. Let's equally place importance on all four of these areas. That glucose management is important, weight management is important, cardiovascular risk factor management is important, and choosing the cardiorenal protective agents in individuals as indicated in those who have established or are at high risk of disease is equally important. So I think looking towards the future, right now we have a good evidence base in those with established disease. I think we still need to fill in the evidence gap in those earlier in the course of the trajectory, whether one class of medications versus another can alter that course. But I do think in terms of the future, we're going to be looking more holistically in terms of impacting the life course of people affected with metabolic conditions. We're going to be looking at a more integrated management approach across the different specialties and disciplines. And at the same token, we'll have a better understanding of more precise, individualized risk to know when to use which of these agents.
Thank you. So this brings us to the end of the episode. In the episode notes, you can find a link to the Diabetes Knowledge into Practice website, where you can claim CME credits for this episode and find lots more free resources to support your learning in diabetes. Our next will be a Congress special, where we will look at some of the highlights from the ESD 2023. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review or rating to help other people find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and thanks very much to Dr. Arroda.
Thank you.